Okay. 6 o'clock, and it's time to start our meeting, and we appreciate all that are here. Thanks to the Gonzaleses for showing up tonight. It's good to have a good audience. We're going to begin with an invocation and a Pledge of Allegiance. And Amanda, you got that? Okay.
All right. I'll do things a little bit differently. I have a little statement prepared.
Okay.
Child abuse prevention is not just a policy issue. It's a community responsibility. Here in Utah, thousands of children are impacted by abuse and neglect each year. But what's important to remember is this. Abuse is preventable. Prevention starts with awareness. When we understand the signs, changes in behavior, withdrawal, unexplained injury, we are better equipped to step in early. It also starts with strengthening families. Many cases of abuse are linked to stress, isolation, denial, and lack of resources. By supporting parents with education, access to services, and community connection, we reduce the risk before harm ever occurs. In Utah, we have strong partnerships between schools, social services, and community organizations, working to protect children, but they cannot do it alone. Each of us has a role, whether it's checking in on a neighbor, reporting concerns, or simply being a safe, trusted adult in a child's life. Prevention is powerful because it changes the story before it begins. When we invest in prevention, we're not just stopping abuse, we're building stronger families, healthier communities, and brighter futures for our children. Every child deserves to grow up safe, supported, and valued, and together we can make that happen. Be aware, be open, and be active in the lives of our children. So you're in honor of Child Abuse Prevention Month. All right.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First item on the agenda tonight is the consent agenda. If there is no discussion, we'll entertain this as a single motion for tonight. So is there any discussion on the consent agenda? I'll entertain a motion then.
I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Our first business item is a presentation and discussion and possible action to accept the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2025 financial audit. The auditor couldn't be here tonight, but we have the best replacement for him.
April 15th, get an accountant here for some reason. That's not a good night. I don't know why.
You're better than any accountant, so.
Yeah.
So
if they don't have it done by now, they don't do it.
Well, you're probably putting everybody off, so you're extending everybody, I bet, at this point. Anyway, here's this comes from Caleb. First statement, we conducted our audit in accordance with auditing standards generally accepted in the United States of America. And
can everybody hear? He's speaking into the. We got these mics.
Got them. Here we go. Generally accepted by the United States of America and standards applicable to financial audits contained in government auditing standards issued by the Comptroller General of the United States. Our responsibilities under those standards are further described in the auditor's responsibilities for the audit of the financial statements section of our report. We are required to be independent of Oregon City, Utah, and to meet our other ethical responsibilities in accordance with relevant ethical requirements relating to our audit. We believe that the audit evidence we have obtained is sufficient and appropriate to provide a basis for our audit opinions. And this is on page one, and he stated that he'd give us an unqualified opinion or a clean report. Couple of highlights that I'd like to bring up. Financial highlights. That's on page six if you want to see it. Total total net position of the city as a whole increased by $1,106,907. Total unrestricted net position for the city as a whole increased by $291,442. Total net position for governmental activities increased by $569,874. And total net position for business type activities increased by $537,032. He made the statement to the document that all our funds are healthy. He did mention again that he's mentioned in the last two or three times that our irrigation fund is healthy, but it's continues to be supplemented in by the either the water fund or the general fund. He just wanted to, it's not against the law to do that, but he said that you may want to consider action to do that, and I told him that we were working on it.
Can you explain what these four funds are?
The total net position is the money that's the increase that the city has increased by that $1 million. We have roughly $6 million in the bank. Between 5 and 6, I don't know the number. And 5 and 6. The unrestricted money is money that we have that is available for us to use if we wanted to. We can take that out of the rainy day fund. The net position for government activities, I don't know exactly what those are. That's a question for him, but I could ask him and get back with everybody if we want to. On the report on compliance, his opinion on compliance, in our opinion, when I say our opinion, this is Reese CPA, his business. In our opinion, Laverkan City, Utah complied in all material respects with the state compliance requirements referred to above for the year ending June 30th, 2025. There was one finding, he called it a minor finding in his recommendation, and we will address that, but then our one finding was a compliance finding. For the fiscal year end June 30th, 2025, the capital project funds have a negative fund balance. The negative fund balance arose from a lack of reimbursing the fund for expenditures incurred on behalf of other funds for projects capital in nature. Utah law prohibits negative fund balance accumulation for governmental activities. Furthermore, when a negative fund balance has been incurred, Utah State Code annotated 10-6-1172-2 requires that entities shall, and this is on page 66 by the way, requires that entities shall include a line item of appropriation within the budget to begin removing the negative fund balance. If management did not contain such an appropriation within the budget established for the fiscal year and June 30, 2026. That is probably on me. I forgot to tell Christy to make the transfer. His recommendation is we recommend that management review the budget and identify funds available to begin removing the negative fund balance within the capital projects fund. Once the funds have been identified, then we recommend amending the budget to ensure that Utah law is followed by conforming to budgets. We've identified that money. I wrote a letter to the state tax commission explaining to them that it was an error on my part, and they just recommended in our next budget amendment at the year end that we just transfer the money in there. We have the money, this wasn't put in the proper fund. So that was our only finding, and they counted it as minor. Yeah, like I said, he gave us an unqualified opinion or a claim report, which is what we wanted.
So we need a motion to approve the financial audit, is that correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Entertain them. Mayor, I'll make a motion that we approve the financial audit.
For June 30th, 2025?
2025.
Okay. We have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, John?
Yes.
Amanda?
Yes.
Yes.
Micah?
Yes.
Darren?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Next item is consideration and possible action to set a public hearing on May 20th, 2026 regarding year 2026, what's the FY, the fiscal year 2026, 2027 preliminary budget.
Yes, the budget, you got it in your packet. Everything, if we didn't address it in last month when we approved the budget amendment, we approved a bunch of stuff that the departments have looked for, wood chips and the excavator and things like that, have been addressed in this budget. A couple of the key ones is there was some money set aside for a new building out at the cemetery. We're going to do that in phases. Phase one, I believe, is around $60,000. It's incorporated into this budget. The 2% COLA and the 2% merit increase is incorporated into this budget. We did get back from our insurance people. We always do the preliminary budget and figure around 8-10% increase, and it was 4.5% or something like that increase in our health insurance. The other insurances, they don't really report depending on the reminder, but the big one is the health insurance. You know, there was a less than 5% increase in health insurance. There is it was asked for a small portion for trails was put in there. Wasn't a whole lot, but it was a start for maintenance and stuff on the trails. But so you know, the budgeted revenue for the general fund and this budget that you have before is a balanced budget. Any of you have any questions or concerns, this is the final budget. That's what the May 20th time frame is to approve next year's budget. But we can make changes to this budget at any time. But right now, in the general fund has a budgeted revenue and expense of $3,151,622. The debt service fund, which the debt service fund is just a fund that we use to pay our bonds with, so money gets transferred from the general fund into that, and that's what we pay them, has a budgeted revenue and expense of $92,700 for the bond payments this coming year. That doesn't include the bonds that are handled by the water fund and that stuff. The debt service only handles the money from the general fund. So any bonds that are paid from the general fund are going to the debt service. Water fund has a budgeted revenue and expense of $1,646,500. Sewer fund, $958,000. Irrigation fund, $157,500. That is not a very big budget for the amount of time that our crew spends on irrigation. So hopefully when we get a new system in, that will improve significantly. But again, that's been brought up. It is supplemented or subsidized by other funds. Garbage fund, $388,500. Drainage fund, $282,000. And the cemetery fund is $15,000. On the cemetery fund, what we do is we take some of that money is for perpetual care. It has to be in there and it's there forever. And we used to have money expended out of that fund. What we do now is we transfer money from the cemetery fund into the general fund, and all grave openings and whatever maintenance we have to do in the cemetery is handled in the general fund. So we transferred, I think, that's what we transfer is $15,000, which is well below what we collect. And then, of course, we collect based on people getting buried and buying cemetery plots. So the total overall budget for the working city is $6,691,822. All those funds balance right now. The garbage fund and the sewer fund, as we've been told before, those are just pass-through funds. We collect the money for those asterisk sewer districts and the solid waste district. That's my explanation of the preliminary budget. So when whoever makes the motion to set the public hearing, then you do approve the preliminary budget as well. Excuse me, as well.
Do we have any discussion on the preliminary budget?
Will we be able to, during the public hearing, to increase
Yeah. And it, yeah, the budget, now when you approve it, which we're hoping happens on May 20th, when you approve it, and that's what it is, and then if you want to increase it, it takes a budget amendment.
Right.
There is another public hearing and all that stuff. And we do 2 to 4 budget amendments a year. It's pretty standard procedure because grant money comes in and the way you can't spend money until you show it's coming in, and that's what we have to do, which is why we're having another year-end budget amendment for some grant money.
Any other discussion? Micah, anything?
Scott? Nope.
Linda?
Not right now.
Okay, well, who would like to make a motion to approve, to send the public hearing and approve the preliminary budget?
Mayor, I'll make a motion that we approve first set a public hearing on May 20th, 2026 regarding the fiscal year 2026-2027 preliminary budget.
Okay. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
A motion and a second. Darren?
Yes.
Micah?
Yes.
Scott?
Yes.
Amanda?
Yes.
John?
Yes.
Okay, next item.
I'm just going to ask you, we'll make sure that everything is advertised and ready to go. Come on.
Okay. Next item on the agenda is consideration of possible action to approve Resolution 2026-07, a resolution adopting a policy governing the preparation of city council meeting agendas and the submission of agenda items. Faye,
yeah,
you want to take that?
Let me kind of explain why this is on the agenda. About a month or so ago, we had a situation come up where the staff was concerned that there may be for lack of a better word, a run on building permits to build duplexes in the R110 zone. We didn't know if that's really what the city wanted to have happen, and so we felt like it needed to be brought before either the planning commission or city council for determination on that issue. We were concerned, however, about vested rights. And vested rights is simply a doctrine that says a person has a vested right in having their application considered based on the law then in effect at the time they submit a completed application. So, there are two ways basically to kind of counter vested rights. One way is for the city to have gone down the path of declaring a moratorium. People usually don't like moratoriums. They're easy to attack on a legal basis because the city has to find a compelling countervailing public interest in enacting them. They want to do it for 6 months, and et cetera, et cetera. So generally speaking, we don't like to do moratoriums. The other way of preventing vested rights from occurring is under this doctrine called the pending ordinance doctrine. And basically what the pending ordinance doctrine says is if there is a pending ordinance, pending meaning it's on the agenda of a meeting, the ordinance has been drafted and it's been set for public hearing, then it's a pending ordinance, and any application filed during that time is in effect stayed until after the matter is resolved, until after the ordinance is either amended or not amended. And then, depending on which way the council goes, the applicant would have to comply with the new ordinance. Okay, so we elected to, instead of doing the moratorium route, we elected to simply go with the pending ordinance doctrine by having it immediately placed on the agenda for the planning commission meeting. And again, by the way, This was without any input from the city council.
There was one council person.
There was one council person that was, we talked a little bit about it.
Yeah, but that did want to put it on.
Yeah, yeah, that was concerned about it.
Yeah.
We immediately placed it on the agenda of the Planning Commission meeting, we scheduled a public hearing, we drafted up the ordinance, and then when it came before the Planning Commission, everybody was kind of looking at each other like, what's this? You know, how did this get here? Why is this on the agenda? And because the ordinance itself has some recitations saying that the city council believes this, and the city council makes a determination of this and this and this. They turned to John, members of the Planning Commission turned to John and said, John, do you know anything about this? And John goes, well, no, I don't know anything about this. So a question arose as to why it was on the agenda, how it got there. A couple weeks later, when we were discussing this at City Council meeting, we had a discussion about how items get put on the agenda. And then that discussion led to a further discussion of maybe what we ought to do to clarify things was draft up a written policy that the council could approve by resolution as to how matters are placed on the agenda and come up with a few basic rules so that there's some clarity and transparency as to how matters are placed on the agenda. So that's how this resolution that you have in front of you now came into being. After that meeting with the City Council, I took it upon myself to go back, draft up a resolution, and here it is. And if you want to discuss it and approve it tonight, you can do that. If you feel like it needs to be discussed further, certainly that's a possibility, and the Council can do whatever it wants to do with it. Essentially, what this resolution does is sort of put down in a written policy form what we have pretty much been doing all along, and pretty much what all communities do in terms of the agenda. So that's it.
And one of the questions I had for Faye was, are we doing anything wrong when we're setting up the agenda now?
No.
And of course he says we haven't been, and so
there's nothing improper about the way we've been handling it, sort of informally.
Mm-hmm.
But if people feel better about having something in a more formal written policy, then this is one way to do it.
Okay. Discussion. John, do you have any comments?
I think I've kind of pestered Faye a little bit back and forth about, you know, just a general understanding. I think one of the things we do through resolutions or through, you know, passing these policies is kind of also educate the public as well as educate incoming council members. And, you know, it's fine to have a practice, and I don't have any reservations about the practice. It's just that, you know, I thought it might be better for council people to understand, you know, there's an opportunity for them to also submit issues for agenda items.
Exactly.
And I think we're, you know, very close on, you know, on the resolution itself. I think there's a few things I'd still like to talk with Faye about, and I've asked him about that. I mean, I might make a motion. We just table it for a session or two so that we can clarify some of the issues. Maybe some of the council people can better understand what's going on with it.
What are some of those issues that you're...
You know, it's just the construction of it. I've talked with Faye about even, you know, some of our code is outdated. For example, we have nothing in our code that explains the rights of the council members themselves. That change came in years and years ago, but we never kind of adopted it. You can look at people like Tocqueville have a very clean adaptation of that code that fits much better, and I would like to talk with you a little bit about that. But it also, some of the duties of the mayor have changed. When I first talked to Faye about Richard leaving his position, there was some discussion about even what kind of government we had, whether we're a six-member government or a mayor-council government, or and it was unclear at the beginning. And it does affect your right to participate in voting for him and not. So some of those things I'd just like to clear up. One of the items in here talks about two members, and it's a kind of a code issue. Not that we can't adopt it as a non-special meeting addition, but the problem with that is it's a very specific piece of the code. It talks about the recorder having additional duties when we request a special meeting, and so far notification and all. So I don't think some of those things are necessary. There's a lot of little things like that that I think either it's just my understanding of it, or that we can just clean up a bit in a, you know, a couple of weeks' time. So that's why I'd prefer, if we can, to just table it. And so I'd make that motion, and, you know, if it fails, it fails. You can vote on the issue if you'd like.
Before you make the motion.
That, let me just make a comment, and that is, state legislatures making changes to the municipal code all the time. Every year, there's something new come down the road. We aren't required necessarily to adopt all of those changes into our Utah code, into our city code. There are many things that we don't. So what that means is, if it's not in our city code, then we revert back to Utah code. So for example, if we're talking about filling a vacancy on the council and the role of the mayor in doing that, we look to city code. To include all of those items in our city ordinances would be a huge task.
You mean we look to state code?
Yes, state code. What did I say?
We look to city first, not that it's not there.
Well, yeah, we look to state. Basically, the state code is the preeminent authority of the state of Utah. Now, they've delegated authority to the cities to enact certain rules and ordinances within the powers granted by the state code. If we don't do some of those kinds of things, then we just simply look to the state code provisions. That's what we frequently do. But to try to adopt every change that comes down the road into our ordinances every year, you'd have to have somebody on it pretty much several months out of the year just to do that.
Just a comment. When I first was elected as mayor, I was on the city council, and so we needed to have a replacement for me. And at that time, if there was a tie, to break the tie, the mayor could vote. This last time, when we replaced Dick's place with Scott, I couldn't vote, even if there would have been a tie.
And that was not a matter of city ordinance. That was a matter of state law.
Right. And so, and those things changed. And,
yeah.
And so it was, those type of things will change as time goes on. But before it was okay, the last time it wasn't, so it was all...
Well, there are numerous examples of that. You know, we're talking about the SIMPA out here, when the state legislature changed all the rules and regulations regarding that. That's not something we've adopted into our ordinances because it's part of the state code. We don't have to do that.
Yeah.
And so there are a lot of things like that. Now, there may well be some things, like John is suggesting, that we might want to put in our code. Just to clarify, if we have conflicts between the city code and state code, then we certainly would want to clarify that.
Yeah.
But even if we don't do that, even if our code is not up to date, all that simply means is we don't use our state code with respect to that issue. We look to the state our city code. We look to state code.
And another comment I'd like to make, too, is that where it says two council members can place something on the agenda if they want to, but there's been many, many times that just a single council member has come to me as a mayor and said, I'd like to put this on the agenda. And I have no issues with that, and I think Patty could say that as well, because she came many times and wanted to have things on the agenda. I had no issues with that, and we were able to put those on the agenda. And so if you feel that way, if you feel like you want something on the agenda, just let me know.
This policy, as it's drafted now, gives primary authority to the city, to the mayor, to determine what goes on the agenda. However, if two council members want something on there, or if the council decides at a council meeting that it wants to have something appear on the agenda, simply pass a motion and it's on the agenda. And the reason for those kinds of rules is to prevent a mayor from simply stonewalling and not putting something on the agenda that
you better watch out with me
because
I'm stonewalling.
So there are safeguards in what we've drafted.
Anyway, before the motion, I'd like to ask, see if there's any other council people want to make any comments. Would you like to make any comments, sir?
I just think it's good. I like the layout of it, and I like kind of understand a little bit more how it works because you can only learn so much from other things.
Yeah.
And seeing it in print, I think, is pretty handy and being able to understand a little bit more. So, thank you.
Scott, any comments? Micah?
No, just that it looks pretty similar, I thought, to what we've been doing, but again, I don't know that I've ever seen it written down, but I've always understood that it would take two of us, if the mayor wasn't putting it on, that we could get it placed on there, and just to see it written down is nice, and I'm fine. The motion hasn't been made, but if it'd make you feel more comfortable, if we took another little bit to look at it, I have no objection to that.
Darren?
Yeah, no problem.
Okay. You want to make that motion? Go ahead.
Sure. And one more explanation. I mean, there are a lot of arcane things in the code. I'm kind of familiar with it a little bit. And, you know, everything in Utah, everything in city government or municipal government in Utah is basically in the control of the city council. Even policy making is everything is done through resolution. The exercise of legislative authority is done through resolution in the state. So by adopting this, or not adopting it, we exercise that legislative authority. So with that, I'd just like to make a motion that we just table the issue for one session. We can bring it right back. And, you know, it gives me a little bit of time to maybe feel a little bit more comfortable and maybe make a few more suggestions.
Sure. I'm good with that, so.
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
No opposed. Okay. All right. Next item on the agenda is consideration and possible action to approve Ordinance 2026-10, an ordinance creating an MDR 8 medium density residential zone. You want to take that one?
Basically, we're bringing a lot of ordinances through that may not be applicable down here, but we're trying to get ahead of the game for the top site. So the MDR 8 is medium density residential, 8 units per acre, 35 feet height restriction if the building is, let's see, I forgot my glasses, so I'm going to try to read it. If it's not attached, but if it's attached, 40 feet. So generally, it's going to give you about a 3-story building. Lot coverage shall not exceed 70%, and then we have open space requirements, 200 square feet for active open space per dwelling, 100 square feet active open space for each unit, which would be in the guise of an outdoor patio type thing, and then another 100 square feet shall be provided for common recreational area. And so basically, these aren't 8 units, may seem like a lot, but 8 units providing all of these open space requirements and height restrictions that keep us down minimally within that 3. I don't really think you can push that 4 actively with the height requirements that are restricted on this, and then just the units per acre. So I wasn't here for planning commission. I assume since it came this way, they were good with it.
Yes.
So basically, that's really, really trying to get online for the top side. Not saying this may not work somewhere down here, but really we're trying to ramp up for up there.
Okay, any comments or question?
I just had one quick one. You know, we use the term twin homes in here, and I know there were some concerns earlier about duplexes. And I think it's interchangeable, I'm not really sure. But under this, if it was used down here, it doesn't have to be. You can overlay it anywhere, it's just an existing code. But if you were to overlay it in areas like along Main Street, which is one of the concerns, would it allow for duplexes in those areas?
This is not going to be an overlay. It will actually be the zone under its own.
So they would have to come in and just request it.
Yeah.
It go through the ELUA, I take it.
No, to change
zones. Don't change that. They would go to the planning
council. Yeah, planning commission, city council. So okay. You guys have full active ability to see what's coming down, and we would definitely, right now, at some point we go through and we have these other work meetings, we may want to decide where we'd actually like to see something like this, if we even want to see it down here, so that when people call us and ask for it, we can say, well, we want to put it here on Center and Main. We said, no, it's not going to happen. This is the only area that the city council would feel comfortable allowing something like that for. They may not want it at all, and we'll just shift to the top side. So it's better where it's a standalone zone than being an overlay within a number of different zones, like what we did for doing the mixed use that's coming through. So.
Well, that would require everybody to go to the Planning Commission, submit an application for a zone change. A public hearing would be held at the Planning Commission level. They would handle all that, and then they would make the recommendation and come to you, which you may or may not.
Yeah, the only concern I had is that when we developed the ELUA, we used it for multifamily dwellings, single family, multifamily, and I didn't know if this would fit into that area. It seemed like it might.
What? This, if it's four units or greater, it would come to you guys. If it's four units or greater, it would come to you guys. Under four and under, it would be under the ELUA's ring. But like Kyle said, none of that matters because it would be a zone change where there's not a designated zone for it at all right now. So you guys still have a front row seat on it coming before you put a zone change, and you take the action at that time to approve it or say no, we don't want it. So
have we designated any zones up top?
No.
We've done percentages of different, commercial properties and density areas, but no zones.
That development agreement was very vague because we didn't know who's going to get the property. So.
And we don't know what kind of plan they're going to come
right,
to
they
us.
Will come and make recommendation or not recommendation, they will ask.
Yeah.
And at that point, they will be able to look at our zones, assuming that this is part of it, and say, hey, we like this zone.
DR.
So they'll look at our zones and then give us a proposal we love this area.
Yeah. We're just scared that the Planning Commission right now is just scared that we get a big run on the top side and we get buried and then we end up not getting something that we want. Whereas if we take a lead in providing a lot of other zoning options, if we have to amend, it's easier to amend something that's already there rather than have to create it and go forward with it. So that's kind of why we're doing what we're doing right now.
Which is good. I think D.R. Horton has already, their idea is a planned community development up there, and they're going to come with their plan and say, this is what we'd like to do. And if we have these created already, then we can say, okay, you could do this and this. And so that we're at least have a say on it.
Sure.
But they will come and ask you for specific zones.
Exactly.
Not up there yet.
Exactly.
John, this and the next couple that we're going to look at were all recommended and reviewed by the Planning Commission.
Yeah, the Planning Commission was fine with this. I just had a couple of questions that, I didn't seem to get a read one way or another from them, so
okay.
I just thought I'd readdress them here.
And did you have any comment?
My only comment is the up to three stories and that building height. I know most people live in Laverkin, not because it's this big city, and I think having these really tall buildings is going to be a little sad to watch really tall three-story buildings come in, and it's going to lose a lot of character and lose that small town feel. So if we can regulate it a little bit with putting this ordinance in, then yeah. But yeah, I wish it was a little bit shorter. Maybe stick to two stories so we don't go any higher.
You don't like high rises?
I moved out of Vegas because there's just too many. My neck hurt all the time.
Scott, any comment? Any more, Mike?
No.
Darren?
No.
Okay, entertain a motion then.
Mayor, I will make a motion that we approve ordinance number 2026-10, an ordinance creating MDR 8 medium density residential zone.
Do we have a second?
I'll second, Mayor.
Okay, Darren?
Yes.
Micah?
Yes.
Scott?
Yes.
Amanda?
Yes.
Yes.
Next item is consideration of possible action to approve ordinance 2026-11, an ordinance creating an R16 one-family residential zone. Yes, you want to address that?
So this is kind of a two-headed issue. So in our R36 zone, it allowed, so that would be one unit per month per 4,000. For six, one per six, each additional unit is an additional 4,000. It allows the person that is in the R36 zone to come in under the development agreement and actually get rezoned to an R16. And I don't know if you're aware where the east subdivision is down from our city office. That was in an R36 zone. They came in to the development agreement with the city and turned over to an R16. So rather than go through all of that, and we didn't really want to put ourselves out by making more R36 or R36 areas, we came up with, we all just have a provision for an R16. So the key factors in the R16 that are going to be a little bit different is that in like your R18 zone, you have in the front, you have 25 setback from the front. You've got 8 on one side, 10 in the back, and then 10 on the other side. We've taken this because of the lots are going to be smaller, people can really try to jam the houses on there. We're allowing the setbacks to be 5 and 5 on the sides, so we stay fire code ready. 10 will be in the back, but in the front, because we're going to allow the houses to move forward, we're going to keep the garage setback to 25 feet so the trucks and the vehicles don't interfere with the sidewalk. But we're going to let the main portion of the house move forward by 5 feet. We have some conversation where that was 20 feet, 15 feet, but according to this, what I saw, 20 feet is kind of where they put that out so that people can make more use of the backyard because more people are trending to using the backyard more than the front yard. So by pulling a house forward, it's not wasting property and putting buildings in the back. And it does have a provision that all the houses that are in this zone have to be, at least the front, have to be landscaped. And that's kind of a double-edged sword, too, because any new houses that come in now under the agreement we have with us in the Conservancy District, they have to submit a landscaping plan. And all front yards have to be landscaped according to the provisions of that prior to CFO. They just ended up putting that particular section, spelled it out a little bit better in here than that. So that's pretty much where that is. I guess we're seeing this more as something towards the top side, maybe it might be something down towards Interstate Rock property, I don't know, but anyway, that's just kind of not really a picked spot for it, it's just prepping.
Okay, any comments or questions? Darren, Michael? Scott?
No.
Amanda?
Nope.
John?
No.
Entertain a motion now.
Mayor, I'll make a motion that we approve ordinance number 2026-11, an ordinance creating R16 one family residential zone.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
We have a second. John?
Yes.
Amanda?
Yes.
Scott?
Yes.
Micah?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Next item is consideration of possible action to approve the mayor signing a letter of support for the next phase of the Potempi Virgin River Trail.
Yep.
This is to start the NEPA process, is that correct? And I do have a question about the trail. Is it still going to be accessible by ATV to the sand traps? Or
no. According to the water district.
Is what?
The water district saying they're not going to let the ATVs down in the canyon.
How are we going to get down there?
Probably for maintenance, so lots of bounty.
Did they change their opinion on that? Because that wasn't their opinion a year and a half ago.
According to Zach, when we were down there, he said that that's always been the rule. They haven't enforced it. But he just feels like that it's too loud and too dangerous. So that's what Zach said to me. I don't know if that's an official policy or I don't know the details, but that's what he told me.
Maybe they can make an exception just for the road going to the sand traps and back and keep them off of the trail other than that.
If you see the price tag of this, I don't know that this trail will be built in our lifetime, so
I have a question. With that trail going up the hill, it's not going to be ADA accessible. I don't see how they can build it going up where the sand trap road comes down. The steepness, would they ever consider putting stairs like they did out here? Because it's not going to be ADA. That's too narrow for you to even zigzag up there to get your slope.
The plan, that's one of the areas of concern. So, but they're still shooting for to meet the trail plan.
They changed the, if I may speak, they changed the trail alignment going up the hill. The that road has to stay there for the water conservation review, and so the trail will actually take longer switchback.
Yeah,
we have to cut into part of the hillside. Part of it will be parallel to the road, and the trail might come back onto the top of the road somewhat, but it does have to be, I think the slopes were no more than 10% at the most, which is what they'll have on design for the trail. They're hoping for less than 10%, but right now, only 10% of design work's been done.
Right, well, and I know that Zion Corridor Trail added a tremendous amount of money to get up over the hill because they tried to keep them at, I thought it was 8% the mean that they had, but they have the flexibility. There's nowhere else out about it. That I don't see how they're going to keep 10%. It's
that's
why I wondered if they could put, because it's not going to be ADA compatible that I know of, or I think it would be hard to consider putting stairs in.
By
then they put an elevator.
Yeah.
Right now they're hoping that it will be well under.
We have a map we can show you over there.
I've seen the map, and I still don't think they can do it.
To ATV trail ride.
Maybe an elevator?
Yeah. Upstairs. Escalator.
Yeah,
well,
escalator would be
okay. I see business quite often.
I may say one more thing. In the last meeting, as we're talking about the price tag, right now, in today's dollars, the entire trail, if we've done all at one time at today's dollars, would be about $12.5 million. That's from the bridge in Confluence Park under SR9 up to SR9 and connect to the future Zion Corridor Trail. So that's probably not feasible when it comes to the actual construction grants, etc. So we were talking about different phases, and Darren came up with a perfect phase one. So he can tell you about it.
So we felt like kind of focused on the areas that we could actually utilize. Wouldn't be wise to start with phase one up on the switchbacks, you know, if we couldn't even get to them. So we broke it into five sections, and we felt like the most important section would be right there as you come down from the Hurricane or come down from Hurricane. And phase one would basically start there at the old bridge and go up to the second bridge so people could at least in that area.
You mean from Confluence Park Bridge to
from the old bridge by Botanique?
Oh,
and then on up the canyon to the next bridge.
Oh, that isn't built, right?
Or the where the
pipeline bridge
goes across. Yeah.
Oh, pipeline bridge. Okay.
So that needs to connect into the existing lower Lurkin trailhead, which we already have. The trail could even run along 100 West down to the canyon, or there could be a parallel site. But that would be a very cost-effective way to get phase one done, which would give all of the residents and tourists staying in Laverton access to both the overlook and to the river trail. And then if it went the other direction toward Confluence Park, then Laverton is in.
Is the water just going to allow the trail going on top of the pipeline over the bridge?
No.
Over the
they said they were the first, and now they've changed their mind.
Okay.
Just they're worried about their infrastructure being damaged.
And this letter is just to approve the NEPA part, which, when are they going to do away with NEPA studies? Is that?
Yes.
Never?
Nothing.
Hey, he might do it.
The NEPA and 30% design. So we've actually already approved this work in our original letter of support, but because we only got partial funding, we got 80,000 out of the 200 that we asked for, we have to do a new grant application now, and the state said that our grant would look much better if we had updated the letter of support. So that's all. This is just saying that we didn't change your mind.
Okay. We need a motion, I guess. So.
I'll make a motion that we approve the mayor signing a letter of support for the next phase of the Pontiac River Trail.
Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. No opposed? Okay. Next is mayor and council reports. I don't have, let's see, do we need somebody to do the scholarship thing?
Well, today was the last day. I think we only had one turn in.
Really?
Well, I don't think anybody else did, so, and today was the cutoff, so.
Does anybody from the council want to go to the school and pass it out? Darren did it last year.
Yeah, my last turn. Well, I did it the year before. We've got three, but you might want that.
Sounds like my kids.
Tommy? It's not required. School will just do it.
Okay.
Did they have you stand up?
Yeah, it's nice to be there, and I think it tells our people that we care about our students. So.
They've changed the way they do it, too. The high school now doesn't give out the college. They don't announce the scholarships that the kids get from individual universities or whatever. Now it's just a local, and they give you a chance to get up there and fist bump the kids.
Yeah.
Anybody like to go? John, Amanda, Scott?
When is it?
Whether it's in May
sometime. May, like 10th.
What, 10th or 12th or somewhere along there.
Sure, I'll do.
Good man. Thank you.
So this single applicant then would get full amount?
It's $500.
$500. What we get.
Kyle, the information you sent me that I sent to the youth council and to all the joint kids.
Oh, that's right.
So I think
they might come in tomorrow. I take that back. It is the 16th. I was thinking today. It was the
16th. I think I told it.
So any kid that turns in between now and tomorrow at 5 o'clock. So. We may ask more.
Okay.
But I'll announce that. Scott, if you're going to do that, I will get you something you can handle.
Sounds great.
Okay.
Okay. I think that's a good thing for our class. I think it's worked out well since we've been started doing it. And last year, I think we did four, is that correct? Or five?
At least three. No, we did. I think we did six.
We might have done six. Yeah, there was quite a bunch last year, but.
It says that we only give two out. You guys are soft and you give it out. Money like we've got. We'll figure it out.
That's always money you can find.
Make it rain.
We can find that. It's good. Yeah. Good thing for the kids.
It is a good thing. I'm all for it. So, anyway, Kyle, you got any updates?
Yes, a couple things. The contract's been awarded for a while for the bridge over here. And when you refer to it, they refer to it as the SR9 bridge. We need to refer to it as the Little Irving Bridge. That's what it is now. We can just self-name it. They're waiting on supplies. The contractor has been awarded. I can't remember who it is, but they're waiting on stuff to get. It all has to be, I think, what you guys call American-made and all that kind of stuff. So.
Them.
So is it fencing?
I don't know. Whatever it is.
AIS.
Yeah, fencing for the interior part of that. We had good support, the ribbon cutting, thanks to those that came out. We were again the Spotlight City, and it's still going on, but I think the festivities, as far as things that we need to be to, are probably gone, unless you want to go to a concert. Fourth grade foresters is April 23rd. That's going to be right out here. We'll have a short program for the kids around 9:30, the last 20-25 minutes, and then we're going to plant a tree, another one right out here. Derek's crew will have that ready to go. And I'll read you a text that came from Mr. Ben Willits that I just asked him tonight in regards to the AFCU property up on top of the hill. It said AFCU and a group out of Arizona is in the final revision of the contract to have the contract finalized, and then we'll officially be under contract. I'll keep you updated as it progresses. Thanks. So apparently there's someone that has got it out of Arizona. There are several, but I think at least two groups out of Arizona, so I don't know which one. Anyway. So that will be the top side of the bill, and I know that D.R. Horton is just waiting for whoever gets that, because the infrastructure up there is going to be tied together between the two properties, but they're going to be approximately 800 or 900 acres up there that will be changing. That's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Hey.
I don't have anything in particular to report on.
Okay, thank you. Micah.
Kyle hit on a few of those things, so.
Sorry.
No, it's good. So, the rec department's in the process of organizing the summer events, especially some emphasis and focus on the 4th of July with the 250 celebration. And I have a picture here of the new bell, the city bell. It will go in the tower. I'll try to forward these pictures to you after. City of the float, or a picture of the float that the royalty was on for the parade. So that's just an update on that. Share more with you on the summer themes as that comes. And then as far as the police department, some of the officers have been helping out with the fair. There's some different events and that there, so we've got a presence down there. And going to be part of this Saturday, right, Chief?
Yeah, we did the special lead rodeo.
Oh, that's right.
With all the first responders out there on Saturday. So I was like,
how'd that go?
It was windy.
Yeah.
But it's super well received, and those kids are very appreciative, and they like all the shining lights and stuff we bring out. Very cool.
And that's all I have.
Darren?
Oh, excuse me. So we had our America 250 meeting today. They, you've just seen around the county these amazing, the Santa Clara big event, the Washington County Fair, or the parade. And so they said that we need to really step it up over here on the east side of the county. And I didn't mention to them about our bell and plaque. But if we have any other events they'd really like to know and get them on the calendar, that we could focus on in American 250. So I don't know if we have anything coming up parade-wise or action-wise that we're thinking of the American 250.
4th and 24th, Winterfest.
So, yeah, they were, St. George is offering $1,000 for the best float that has the American 250. Some of these cities are really going all out, so it's exciting. We had a Confluence meeting, a park meeting with Ash Creek Sewer District, Ben Scow, Casey Lofthouse, Cameron Rogan, and the commissioners. And Cameron's really gearing up to get trees planted. In fact, they started a budget they had to get the trees ordered now, so they could be here in time to plant. You have to order some of those trees a year in advance. So in that area right around the parking lot, there's going to be a few fruit trees in there. They were going to do a lot of fruit trees, but Ben kind of said, it's tough because all the deer, you got to build high fences around them down there. They're out in the public, so the fruit gets eaten by the public quicker than you can pick it. So there are going to be a few fruit trees, but that in that area, you know, just right there to the east and south of the parking lot in those irrigated areas. But there'll be field grass in there, so they want to make that really beautiful so people can go down in there and take pictures and it'd be a beautiful spot. And then get trees planted. Derek got irrigation down to them over by the old buildings, the power plant, so they're going to start planting. They've got approved for some portable watering systems, and Casey's agreed to move those systems, so they're throwing out grasses that are native grasses and planted flowers, and to get those established, they have portable watering that's going to go all along. So, you know, a lot of you all heard about the citizens getting upset about the lack of trees and when the water, the sewer district cut those down, so that those seeds have mesquite in them, so there'll be mesquite trees growing up and native trees, and that'll be watered, so that'll be exciting. I talked to Mike from Ash Creek Sewer, and if we want to do something as far as a packed trail, a nice trail coming down from 600, a lot of us on the northwest side like to use 600 to access the park. They have no problem with that. And he, in fact, said we could even do a little parking area. I don't know if that's ever been discussed, but for the people on the northwest side of town, that would be a nice access to the park. The Rim to River Trail, Patty, and a gentleman from the state?
He's the owner of Zion Cycles.
Oh.
The chair of the trail subcommittee for the DRC.
And the builders of the trail. We're going to go look at it tomorrow and see if there's any anything we can do to... that gravel, when we first did it and we packed it, it was quite nice. Now that it's loosened up, it can get kind of slick, and I don't know, did y'all get that letter from the person who fell? I got a letter from an out-of-state person who fell and just encouraged us to do some work. We're going to go see if there's maybe we can put in some steps or something in some of those steep spots to alleviate that steepness. So that's all I need. Well, we're going to do that tomorrow. Friday morning at 8:30.
Okay.
So if anybody wants to come and give their suggestions, then we'd love to see you at 8:30.
Okay, thank you. Scott?
It wasn't much from the fire district. They chose an oversight group to be able to help with finances that they have. A pretty brief meeting last time. Ash Creek was similar. Just talked about upcoming projects that they have. And pretty brief meetings that we had on both fronts. So.
Have you heard when they're going to start up the sewer plant? Is that?
I haven't heard.
Last time I heard it might be sometime this month. But
I was going to call Mike and ask him see when that might be.
It had some electrical problems with some of the work that was done there, and so that's kind of set them back because they were planning on February, and now it's into April, and it might even go to May. Did he say something to you?
No, but it reminded me of one more thing down there of that we discussed.
That's it? Go ahead.
I forgot to mention, as the new reuse system comes online, they have a ton of water that they have to get flushed out of there, and they don't want to just put it back into the river. And so those fields down there, you're going to see incredible greenery down in Concos, because it's like 400,000 gallons a day or something. Does that sound right?
Between 500,000 and 700,000
thousand a day. And so all of those pastures down there are going to have just an amazing amount of water, so that's kind of exciting that we'll see that greenery coming there.
That'll be good.
And then Derek will be happy to, he doesn't like providing them with flood irrigation out of his system too, so
you said that, not me.
Yeah. So that's been a big concern of ours, is that we're flooding those fields with our irrigation and we're pumping that. It's just an incredible wear and tear and excess of water.
Yeah.
Now it'll come out of that system, so that'll be a thousand times better.
Amanda?
The The solid waste meeting was supposed to be Monday, last Monday, but there wasn't a quorum, so it's going to be this Monday. So I don't have any updates right now.
Okay. John?
The mosquito abatement group hasn't met. They meet pretty infrequently. And so far as the Planning Commission, I'm really impressed with the help we've brought in. One, to go through the general plan, and it's kind of coming along very well. Also, just redoing all the zoning ordinances is pretty interesting. Brad has been extremely helpful in going through all of that. And you're starting to see some pieces of that come through. And I think they're kind of picking up the pace. They're going to be looking at signage and parking and some of the other issues. So we'll be seeing a lot of their work coming through. Darren and I will be attending the ULCT interim meeting, and so we'll get an indication of where the legislature may be going in the next session, or if they're going to be some, I don't know if they're going to have some extraordinary interim meetings at the legislature. Sometimes there are, sometimes there aren't. So that's pretty much my report.
Okay. I do have a question on the mosquito abatement. If you needed them to come and like treat a water feature around your house or something, is there some things that would they come and do it, or do they?
Yeah, they'll come out at almost at anybody's request.
Okay. If you have mosquitoes around your house, then they'll come and look.
Because of that, Aedes aegypti, they've actually hired one gentleman who's in charge of just the Aedes, and they have a crew that's going out every single day spot treating.
Yeah, they're always available for education. They'll come to city council meetings, especially in your downtime. As things ramp up, you're less likely to get them to come to this kind of meetings, but they'll respond to any citizen request for
that. Anything. Might be a good thing to maybe talk to them about and have them come to the city council when they could. So if you want.
I'll do that.
Well, does your neighbor mayor still have a water feature in the backyard?
Does who?
Gary?
Chase? he does, but I don't think he's got any.
Dried up.
There's probably a little bit of water in it. It might be a spot for mosquitoes. So I don't know if it's any, but.
They have some pretty good solutions for ponds. And if
they spray fish, stuff on it or something?
They have a fish that is excellent for eating the larvae. So you can have features. You just need to make sure that either put in a chemical or the right fish in there to eat them.
Yeah, some of the chemicals are like a one-time chemical. Yeah. It lasts the entire year for rain storm sewers and such. They treat them one time, and that's all they really have to do.
That's good. That's good to know. Okay. Next item on the agenda is citizen comments. Any comments from the citizens? The Gonzalez's? Patty.
I do, yes. So this is actually a thank you to the city on behalf of the Southern Utah Bicycle Alliance. And I'll tell you a little bit about it first, and then Kyle has a video that I hope will work, and then after the video there's
video?
Some photos. Yeah, video.
Oh, I didn't see a video.
It should be maybe down, scroll down in the email to the bottom. Hopefully it's there. So let me tell you a little bit about it first. So the Bicycle Alliance kind of the mission statement is to educate about recreational and active transportation on bike paths, and it is a bike organization, so the focus is on that. But to be honest, all the work we do is multi-use, advocating for multi-use trails, etc. But a lot of education about safety, wearing helmets, how to use trails properly, etc. But we were looking for something, a fun way to enhance bike trails and that, and so we thought an art mural would be really great. And one of the members, we were looking at underpasses, and they are problematic for a lot of reasons, concrete underpasses, and a lot of them are on UDOT properties, so UDOT doesn't allow murals. So one of the members found a 300-foot long by 7-foot high retaining wall, spoke to the developer of the property, and there we go. kind of turned the ball in one sorry. I meant to warn you that. And I apologize if this doesn't work well because I rushed home to get this finished. But anyway, so it's on River Road at 588 East. There's a shopping center there that has Feel Look Coffee, Be Hot Yoga. It's across from two medical complexes that you may be familiar with. So that's the location of this retaining wall behind Feel Look Coffee and that. And the owner of the property said, yeah, put up a mural. So we connected with Jared Jones, who is the muralist who did the Wild Blooms wall in Hurricane. Super talented person. And he became the artistic director for it. And so we needed to, it's going to be volunteer artists, but they needed to be paid stipends, et cetera, and there was going to be a lot of costs and paint, et cetera. So we chose sponsors for the 20, it ended up being 22 panels. We needed sponsors. So this is where the Hurricane City comes in. So thank you, Mayor Wilson, for co-sponsoring one of the panels, along with Red Route Bicycles in Hurricane, and also with Bucks Ace Hardware. And then on, I was really determined to have the east side of the county represented because the theme for the mural is canyon to canyon, snow canyon to Zion Canyon. And so each part of the mural depicts mileage, like anywhere from 3 to 6 miles on the way, and if you think about it, someday there will be bypass that connects Snow Canyon up to Zion. So that's kind of the theme, the idea behind it. So other sponsors on the east side of the county that I think all of you should know about, so that if you come across them, you can thank them. Sunrise Engineering sponsored a panel that depicts Virgin. Laverkin's panel depicts Confluence Park. Springdale City or Town was a sponsor. Jim Soria from River Rock was a sponsor. And on Jim's, his section is, or River Rock, is that section of Laverkin going up the twist. And Annika Durham, I think all of you remember, she was going to run for city council and then had to drop out. She's an amazing artist. So she happened to do that panel. So that was really great. Ryan Lee, who owns Trees Ranch, sponsored a panel for Rockville. So the I just thought, being on that board, that it's so central to the west side of the county because they've been around longer, they're bigger cities, they have more money. And so they're open to ideas, but they kind of forget that the east side exists other than Springdale, you know. And I wanted to make sure that everybody knows that we exist. So, the best way to go see the mural is if you're biking or walking to park at the Crosby Confluence Park in St. George, and then it's about 2 miles down the path from there. But if you don't want to bike or walk, you can park in that Feel Look parking lot. It's a big area. And it's groups of two buildings, so you either have to go to the north end of the building and go across the small retaining wall, or go to the south end and just walk through the building. So you have to search for a little bit if you're just parking. And with that, we'll see if the video works. So, like you say.
It's all done, the painting?
It's finished. Oh, Kelly, you should have received an invitation. invitation for the ribbon cutting Monday evening at 6, and you are all welcome to come. So this is one other thing about the artists. Some of them are professional muralists, and some of them are painters. They're all artists, and they all paint, but not all of them have done murals before. So this depicts Rockville. There's the historic bridge. And so one of the main things was that it had to show a bike path in it, a continuation, and the panels had to connect on the bike path. That was somewhat successful. And then if it was near the Virgin River, that water would show. So this is Springdale right here. And then go to the next one, Kyle. And this is Zion Forever sponsored this, and that's Angel's Landing with Virgin River. And then stay on this one for a minute. This is Confluence Park, and the yellow line coming from the sun is the bike path. You can see a cyclist up there at the top blue. And Katie Ronan is an artist who is from South Carolina, and she was here in Washington County. Her current profession is she helps troubled youth in outdoor environments, so they do those camping trips, etc. So I gave Katie a list of possibilities that could happen for Confluence Park, and I swear she put every single one. So it's very artistic. So this is Virgin. So on the left, you have a sheep on Frisky Bridge Road. You have a goose for Gooseberry Mesa. You have a monkey for Flying Monkey. And then you have a frog for Frog Hollow. And that inspiration actually came from Mayor Krause. And then Kyle, go back just one, I think. Okay, we got that one, sorry. Okay, keep going. And you saw that one, there should be one we haven't seen yet. Go back.
It's Gollum.
Okay, so that's basically it, but there's a total of 22 panels, and then a fourth grade group from one of the elementaries nearby that location did a little tiny half wall. And it was the fourth grade class, and it's really cute because it's something like Mr. Smith's fourth grade class, you know. So anyway, this would be something that, say, if you're spending the day in St. George with guests from out of town, and you take them over to the stairs, take them to the mural. You can get a great walk-in from Crosby Confluence Park. It's beautiful, fun, and you can go get a soda, fill them coffee.
And you said River Road, is that Riverside Drive?
Is it some?
Yes.
Yeah, probably okay. So. Yeah, probably Riverside.
Okay.
So it's great. And there's a Canyon to Canyon, if you go on Instagram and just type in Canyon to Canyon mural, it'll pop up with a bunch of videos and that. So anyway, thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Kyle.
Thanks, Patty. Okay.
That's pretty cool.
Guess that's it. We stand adjourned.
Thank you.